Coming up next on Lutheran Radio UK,
The Lutheran Inquisitor, examining pressing issues and their ramifications for the church today. Depression is the topic of today's show with your host, Pastor John Ehlers.
We'd like to welcome to Lutheran Radio UK, Reverend Todd Peppercorn. Reverend Peppercorn, welcome to LRUK.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
And we appreciate you taking your time out today to discuss this very important topic of depression with us. I was just looking at some of the National Health Service statistics on depression, and according to the NHS, 1 in 10 people in the UK suffers from depression, and 1 in 50 people in the UK suffers from serious bouts of depression, debilitating bouts of depression. I suspect numbers would be similar in the States, and as I try to find a definition of depression, it's kind of like trying to catch the grease pig or nail Jell-O to the wall. It's not easy to do. Do you have a definition for depression?
A good place to start, John, is when we talk about depression, very often we're really talking about at least two different things. First of all, for most people, here in the States at least, when you say depressed or depression, what they hear in their mind, what they're thinking is this is sadness, or maybe, you know, this is sadness, or someone being sad for a long time. And of course, everyone experiences sadness at different points in their life. That's just an emotion that we all have. So that's kind of number one. And then secondly, we have this more technical definition, this medical diagnosis of clinical depression. Sometimes it's called clinical depression. It may be called major clinical depression. And there are a whole host of sort of subcategories behind that. So I think that we need to be clear in our own minds. Are we talking about kind of short-term sadness that's a response to something happening, a grief, a death, or, you know, some kind of event happening? Or are we talking about this more, this medical condition of clinical depression? So that's probably where I'd start. And I can give you a definition of clinical depression, or at least a working one along the way here.
Yeah. Would you do that then, please?
Sure. And I suppose I should also preface this by saying that I am not a medical doctor or a nurse or a psychologist or a psychiatrist. I am a Lutheran pastor serving in the United States, and I am a sufferer of clinical depression. So that's kind of my basic perception or perspective, is as someone, as a fellow sufferer, as well as a pastor who seeks to care for his people that suffer from this disease. Clinical depression really is an extended, low, or extreme mood change where the person is not able to experience joy or grief or sorrow in the way that they normally would. And by that I mean depression isn't simply being sad. It may mean not feeling anything at all. One of the common things you'll find with people who are depressed is this kind of I'll call it a vacant look, like they're there, but they're not really there. And they're, you know, kind of mentally exhausted so that they're unable to process what's going on, which isn't really sadness, but that's very, very common for depression. So I would put it more in this, unable to experience these extremes in the same way that God created us to do.
You've mentioned a few symptoms of depression, the numbness, if you will. I was just talking to someone today who said she had suffered from some bouts of depression after hearing a medical diagnosis. And she said her big symptom was sleep. That's all she wanted to do was stay in bed. I understand that for men it can often be just being grouchy and irritable. Are there other symptoms that if you are depressed that maybe you can look for and maybe even go, wait a minute, am I depressed because I'm going through these symptoms?
And this is a part of it is, of course, God has created us in such a wonderful way that each individual is unique. And so while we're going to have commonalities, obviously, It is going to be different from person to person. Some very common characteristics are going to be this sort of extended sadness. In men, for instance, it often comes out as irritability or anger, lack of patience. What's really going on behind depression, or what's going on, is that your brain is unable to process outside stimulus the way that it normally would. So a lot of times when someone's suffering from depression, they may be very sensitive to light or to noise, even things like really strong smells, which doesn't, you know, kind of rationally doesn't seem to make sense. And yet all of these have to do with how our brain is processing external stimulus. And because the brain isn't processing the stimulus as it is supposed to, this means that it's going to come out, if you will, in different ways. It may mean shutting down, sleep, may mean numbness. It may mean anger, irritability. It can mean forgetfulness. It can mean even things like being, I know that when I was in the worst of my depressive stage, I couldn't read. I couldn't read anything because my brain just could not process the words on the page, which is a very, very fearful thing to experience. So it could, and that's a part of the slipperiness of this, is that it just comes out in so many different ways that it's hard to nail down, and it's also easy to confuse with other illnesses, as well as spiritual maladies that may not be a clinical thing at all. So that's the real hardship about it.
Now, you've touched on something that I want to have a chat to you about as well, is the spiritual aspects. There are some folks who will say to us, a Christian shouldn't get depressed or can't get depressed. If you are a Christian, your faith will keep you whole. If you abide in Christ, he will abide in you and nothing will harm you. What do you think about those sorts of teachings?
I guess that my short answer is, of course, a Christian shouldn't get depressed. A Christian shouldn't die either, or shouldn't get a broken leg. There are lots of things that shouldn't happen. But the fact is that we live in a fallen and broken world, and this side of the final judgment, we are going to experience the wages of sin is death, and that's going to come out in lots of different ways. With depression, what makes it hard is that it is a mental illness. If I break my leg, it is relatively obvious what the steps should be for healing. I go to a doctor, the doctor sets the bone, I may have to have a cast on, and I'm going to wear this for a certain amount of time, and then eventually it will be better. But it's very physical, it's very obvious, you can see it. With depression, what makes it so hard is that it's all inside. And while it may manifest itself, it may express itself in different ways, it is not going to be that sort of, well, I have a broken leg, or I have a rash, or whatever. And for us as Christians, if I can't see it, my instinct as a Christian is to kind of put it into, I'll say, into the spiritual box. Put it into that category where everything that happens in that box is faith-related. And while certainly it's faith-related, and there's an awful lot that can be said about that, this is also a mental process. I mean, there are physiological things happening in your brain. There are chemical imbalances that are going on that are measurable. Your dopamine levels are not being regulated as they should be, and that this affects your ability to receive this outside stimulus. So there are physical things going on, but then there may also be spiritual things going on as well. questions of faith, questions of despair. We hear about the despair, of course, in our small catechism, that God would lead us not to suffer false belief, despair, and other great shame and vice. But that is, but that's what makes this so difficult, and I think that this is why Satan just loves making use of mental illness, is because it's both physical and spiritual. It just gets all muddied up on how I, as a Christian, am supposed to seek for healing.
And I think in some respects, from my dealings with it and experience with it, that's part of the problem, is the focus on me. And often when I deal with people in these situations, as often with physical ailments, the response I get is, why me, God? Are you punishing me? Any thoughts on that? Is this a punishment from God?
In order to answer that question, we have to back up just a little bit and say, why is there sickness in the world and ultimately death? The answer to that is the wages of sin is death, as St. Paul reminds us. And whether that death is quickly or slowly, all of these things, including mental illness, are a result of the fallenness of creation. So certainly I think that you could say mental illness, kind of big picture, is a result of sin in the world. However, that doesn't mean kind of a one-to-one relationship. I committed this sin, therefore God has afflicted me with this illness. If I go down that road, then I'm going outside of what the scriptures say, and I'm trying to assign causes and motivations to God, which is not my business. That's a part of God's hidden will. So I can say, yes, of course it's a result of sin, but so is all of these other sicknesses and death itself. This is why when we look at mental illness as Christians, we can look at it and say, this is a part of our brokenness, this side of the resurrection. This is a part of our mess-uppedness, if you will, as we wait for the last day. So how does God bring about healing between now and then? Well, there are lots of different elements to that, and there is spiritual healing that happens in the forgiveness of sins in the gospel. But God also puts doctors into our lives and counselors and all other kinds of people that are here to care for us and to provide us with a way of receiving help. That's how God works in using people.
And I think you bring in another interesting point, is there are some who would say if you suffer from mental illness, you shouldn't go and see a counselor or a psychologist or a psychiatrist, that if you're a Christian, that's mixing spiritual and secular things. But you were talking about how God uses doctors and counselors as his instruments. Again, would you expand perhaps on that and your,
sure,
your views of the use of medication and of counseling?
Right. Well, and here's the difficulty. When we talk about psychiatry, and psychology, it is a very tricky thing for us as Christians, because there are so many ways that both psychiatry and psychology can be practiced that may be contrary to the Christian faith. There are whole fields of psychiatry that I would argue are based on a faulty view of man, that they don't understand, because they don't understand sin, they're asking the wrong questions, and so they're going to get the wrong answers. Well, this of course is true. But there are also many fields and many doctors and I would argue counselors and psychologists that can be of great benefit to the Christian. What I as a Christian need to do is learn discernment and learn to recognize, okay, this person is helping me to heal my body and my mind. This person isn't telling me how to go to heaven. That's not their job. I don't need to have a, quote, Christian doctor in order to set the bone for a broken leg. God will use them, whatever their faith may be. So it requires discernment. In the same way, just as there are good doctors and bad doctors, there are good pastors and bad pastors, good churches and bad churches, and that we as Christians have to look to the scriptures to see, all right, well, what are they actually saying and teaching and practicing? Is this going to draw me to Christ and to his healing word of forgiveness? Or is it going to draw me back into myself or away from Christ?
And
does that make sense, John?
It certainly does. And your advice, I'm guessing, on the use of medication or antidepressants would be similar?
Sure. Can antidepressants be overused? Of course. Any medication can be overused. I think that the question that the Christian has to ask is this the use of medication, is this a gift from God that may be abused, or is medication itself wrong and evil? What's the difference between taking an antibiotic and taking an antidepressant? There are good ways and bad ways that these things can be used. You know, an antibiotic, of course, can be misused. Lots of good drugs can be used for evil purposes. The question is, how is this going to be a benefit to what God has given me as his child? And that means discernment, which of course is a very hard thing.
It sure is. Can we go back to depression itself? You've touched on a couple of things. In my reading about depression, I see that most folks would say that it can stem from either biological or psychological events. Biological being inheritance, psychological meaning things that trigger it off. Death,
sure.
Divorce, those sorts of things.
Well, and the whole field of mental illness and since we're talking about depression, is a relatively recent field of study. Certainly less than 200 years old. I think you could argue probably less than 100 years old in many ways. But what we are learning and continuing to learn is that there are genetic factors behind clinical depression. So if there is a history of depressive episodes in your family, that's one factor that's going to be worth looking at. There may also be psychological factors going on. There may be events happening in your life, or oftentimes a series of events happening in your life that are going to trigger or cause a depressive episode. I know for myself, while there definitely is a genetic element for me, it was kind of the result of a number of very, very difficult events happening. The death of an unborn child, the death of my mother, a number of other things all kind of piling in and happening in a very short span of time served as a trigger. And that was a big contributing cause for me. As well as spiritual elements. And as Christians, we have to constantly recognize that there is nothing that Satan would like more than to drive us away from the church, from the gospel, from hearing Christ's healing word of forgiveness. And if he can use those physical things as well as situations or events, as well as spiritual attack, then that's a heyday for Satan. He loves it. But that's very difficult for us to try and kind of wrap our brains around, because there are all of these different elements. Again, using the broken leg analogy, you go to the doctor, you get and the doctor's going to take care of you. It is just not that simple when you talk about mental illness, because there are so many different causes that may underlie it, and it's almost never simply one. It's almost always a combination of these causes in different ways.
Now, you mentioned the, in your case, multitude of events that happened that helped trigger this off. And can I also then move forward, because this reminds me of some things I've dealt with in the past, and go to the worst conclusion to depression.
Sure.
Is there a link, a tie between depression and suicide? I know the suicide rate among the young here in the UK is one of the highest in Europe, if not the highest. And is there any connection between the two? And with this taboo subject, how does the church deal with, I suppose, families, friends of those who have committed suicide?
Well, certainly there's a connection. Depression, in so many ways, what depression does is it isolates the person from the outside world. Because of all of this external stimulus stuff, people that suffer from depression are often going to be alone, much more so than would be considered normal. They're going to avoid interactions. They're certainly going to avoid any kind of conflict, because that's going to take an incredible amount of emotional energy, which simply doesn't exist. And it's that isolation which is often going to lead to despair and this pain, which is very difficult to describe. One of the things that's very common when you if you start to read about depression is pretty quickly authors will move to using word paintings, darkness, a fog, trying to walk through molasses, this different kinds of word pictures to kind of get across the difficulty of what's going on. And as a result of that, where for most people, getting up in the morning, picking out clothes to wear, having breakfast and going off to work, this is what you do in the morning. If you're suffering from depression, it may be that it takes you 2 hours to brush your teeth, because it just requires so much effort on your part. And that just skews everything world around you. So that isolation can quickly lead to fear, to the sense of abandonment, where on the one hand, the depressed person desperately needs interaction and love and care from the people around them, but at the same time, they're going to resist it because that interaction is so hard for them. Well, that is a recipe for disaster right there. So it should not surprise us at all that so many people suffering from depression or other mental illnesses end up in this tragic place of taking their own life. Here in the States, we had a big pastor, Rick Warren. You've probably heard of him. Rick Warren he wrote this big evangelical book called The Purpose Driven Life. About 2 weeks ago, his son committed suicide, as a result of depression. So this has kind of been in the news a lot over here. And that's really the issue, is all of these people thinking, well, but he was a Christian. How could he be depressed? Well, he's human. and so Christians are susceptible to the very same things that everyone else is. This does create a real challenge for the Christian church, though, because those people that are suffering with that kind of sense, one of the things that depression attacks is any understanding of self-worth is just obliterated. It's just gone. And as a Christian, of course, we know that our worth does not come from ourselves, but comes from God. But if my connection to God in my mind has been broken, so that I now believe that I am unworthy to be in anyone's presence, far less God, then that's going to lead to a very, very dark place.
And in your dealings, the church's dealings with relatives, friends, families of those who've committed suicide, any advice to us on what the best things to do would be?
I think the first thing to start with, John, is that the kind of the number one rule is to be there, to show up. It's very easy in trying to help people with mental illness of any kind to run away as a church, as you know, as friends, as family, as others, because dealing with the mentally ill is very taxing. It's very hard. They probably are not going to be appreciative of what you're doing at the time. Maybe they are. Maybe they can't show it. It's certainly not going to be measurable. But that physical presence is so incredibly important to recognize, to help this person to recognize, I'm not alone, that I have people who love me, I have people who care for me, and to bring the word of forgiveness from God. And that doesn't mean doing it in a sort of, well, here are the 16 things that you need to do, but being there and making clear to this person that I don't know how to help you, maybe. I won't claim to have all of the right answers or to be able to fix things, but I'm going to be here and I'm going to suffer with you. This is the essence of how we as Christians love one another, bear one another's burdens. And that is a very hard thing for us to do, because there are so many these spiritual questions, these physical questions, the unknown, but it is such an important gift that we as the church, as the body of Christ, can give for one another, especially in our own midst who are suffering. It's hard for me to imagine many ways that we as Christians could show our love for one another more than being with those who are suffering such great need.
The examination on depression will continue next week. Thank you for listening to the Lutheran Inquisitor with Pastor John Ehlers. If you have any questions or comments about the issues raised in this program, send an email to info@lutheranradio.co.uk. The podcast of this show is available from our website. Check our program online and stay tuned.